Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Mark and Sarah talk about songs. Mark and Sarah talk about songs.
Why, yes, we do talk about songs, and we have got a murderer's row of them to discuss today. I am your co-host, Mark Blankenship, here at Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, and joining me, as ever, is my Lilith Lady, Sarah D. Bunting. Hello, Sarah.
Wow. Hello. Enjoy me while you can, because this episode literally might kill me.
So, Sarah, as we have now reached episode 6, that means we are going to be talking about 30 songs that are in contention to be named the Lilith fairest of them all. And as is custom around these parts, we will be ranking every song in our now 30-strong list, but we will only be discussing the 5 newest entries. Why don't you tell us what those 5 new entries are?
Buckle up, folks. One of Us by Joan Osborne, The Promise by Tracy Chapman, Sleep to Dream by Fiona Apple, Stay, parens, I Missed You, and parens, Lisa Loeb and 9 Stories, and Sunny Came Home by Sean Colvin.
And I will say that
I'm already exhausted.
We just created this listing based on putting the songs in alphabetical order by song title. We did not plan for so many of the Mount Rushmore of Lilith artists to appear in one episode, but here we are.
I mean, truly, like there's going to be weeping and not the figurative kind. Like, this is the promise to you.
Now,
but there's a lot of road to get down before we get there. So
for those of you who are new to this process or would just like a refresher, here's how it goes. As we rank these songs, the song that I like the most, that I feel out of these 30 is the most Lilith, will get 30 points from me. The song that I think is the least Lilith will get 1 point, and every other song will get a correlating ranking and point value in the list. Sarah will also assign point values, and our listeners, hopefully including you, have also voted, and we have used listener votes to create a third ranking, so the final ranking for this episode will be an amalgam of all 3 points.
Yes, so One of Us by Joan Osborne. Oh my God. This episode started causing problems immediately, like from the first old crone singing notes of this song.
One of these days at about 12 o'clock.
I don't feel like this song has aged real well, but shall we listen to the clip that you selected and then discuss?
Before we do, let me just say, I had forgotten that she lip syncs along to that old lady singing in the music video, which I found weird and charming. But anyway, yes, let's listen to a clip.
Yeah, if it weren't for the lipstick that were not in the lines, which very 90s, but yeah, One of Us, here's a clip.
What would you ask if you had just one question? And yeah, God is great. Yeah, God is good. Yeah. What if God was one of us? Just a
Now, Sarah, this song reached number 4 on the Hot 100, and it was Joan Osborne's only hit. And I feel like as much as any artist in history, she is a one-hit wonder whose actual musical identity is incorrectly represented by her one hit. Actually, Joan Osborne is a really fucking awesome blues rock artist who happens to have a massive success because of this novelty song about God riding the bus. And the irony, though, is that I feel like if it weren't for this big hit song, I certainly would never have heard any of her other music. I mean, even on this album, Relish, she's got songs like Saint Teresa, Right Hand Man, Ladder. They're so good. And then she's continued to release excellent music for decades. None of it has broken through in such a big way, but she has had an ongoing career as a touring artist. I think that in a weird way, this song that does not represent her has given her the space to make the music and build the career that does. So complicated from that point of view.
Yeah, and that complication is sort of paralleled by the choice of this song on our part, because this is the song.
What the fuck else are we going to talk about, even though we know there are other good songs?
But my notes are pretty much like 90% my musing that we maybe should have picked Saint Teresa, because that was not just more typical of Joan Osborne, but more Lilith-y, in my opinion. Just on subject matter and in being a little less, well, I don't know, like the tweeness of these, of this lyrical story is pretty Lilith-y, honestly. In, you know, Lilith-y can be good and bad.
Right.
And also value neutral at times. But it's like, if people are voting on the Lilithosity of a thing, like Saint Teresa is more Lilith-y, but also not well known.
Yeah, I just feel like it would have been, in a way, because we did talk about when we were pulling the season together whether or not to do Saint Teresa, but you made the argument, and I think you're correct, that like you just said, what else would it be? It would be dishonest of us almost not to have it be this song, because I think, Sarah, you can agree with me here when I say it's not like this song was just a hit. This song was blanketing the culture for a while.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, and it was a theme song, not of a WB show, and it was later, it was in the aughts, but it was the theme song to Joan of Arcadia, which was a good show. And but this conversation is sort of at the heart of this whole season.
Right.
Like, what are we talking about when we say Lilithosity? How do we separate love from Lilithosity? Is it possible for a thing to be too much of, is there a balance of a bunch of different factors, and can something be out of whack in one way and right on in another? Which we've definitely been finding in our discussions. I don't like this song as much as I used to.
Yep.
I think it has dated a little bit. That opener is... sucks. It's annoying.
It's also just so primitivist. It doesn't actually add authenticity to make a recording of an old mountain woman. It just comes across as a little bit shitty, I think.
Yeah. And just asterisking your own, that it's like, here's the symbology. Get it? Like, yes. Like, it's in the title. Okay. It's just a lot of sort of dorm room BS in the lyrics. It's not very femme forward, obviously. God is a guy in the song. Like, if you really want to be Lilith-y, this needs to be a herstory of religion.
Yes, actually, if God had been in any verse been referenced as a woman, I would have probably put this song in like third place.
It's also, I also marked down a little bit because the song was written by the lead singer of the Hooters. I mean, the Hooters are great and we danced as a banger, but that's a guy and his band is named after boobs. So, you know, talk about one hit wonders. He knows how to write them. So, I just kept comparing it to other stuff on the list, and it's like, I felt obliged to assume a certain level of Lilithosity on the part of the song that I was not genuinely feeling. So I ended up with it in 18th place, 13 points.
Sarah, that is wild. That is exactly where I put it.
Nice.
Also 18th place for me. I feel like I couldn't put it in the bottom 10 because Joan Osborne is just exactly the type of artist that Lilith Fair supported.
Yes.
And this is a good time to mention that she was on this VH1 duets special that Melissa Etheridge had, where Melissa Etheridge sang a duet with three up-and-coming singers, Joan Osborne, Paula Cole, and Jewel, all of whom went on to great success, all of whom performed at Lilla Fair, all of whom are on this season. And I think of that VH1 duet special as almost the proto Lilith in a way.
Right.
And
even though Melissa Etheridge, who quote tweeted me, and yes, I literally put that on my resume. Thank you. As Melissa Etheridge pointed out in this quote tweet, like I just had some tweet about her holding that note out of the bridge of Come to My Window. And she was like, teehee, except I actually never played the Lilith Fair. And it's like, it's a state of mind, girl. Also, quote tweet me again.
I know. It was awesome. We got read by Melissa Etheridge, but who hadn't paid attention to what we were doing until that moment and didn't do her research. But who cares? Thank you, Melissa. Yeah.
Yes. And she was not mad. And also, I don't necessarily want her to pay attention to what we're doing because there's like a whole fanfic about her wife being like, the window is your vagina. And this, I don't know what goes on. Don't sue us.
Oh, anyway, yes, I'm glad to be able to have a somewhat natural way to bring up the fact that Melissa Etheridge quote tweeted us about this season. Quote tweeted you.
I can't believe I didn't like jam into a recent edit, just like me in a totally different voice being like, she quote tweeted us, woo!
I will say that we did enjoy a nice little freak out the day that that happened because it was really fucking cool.
Yeah. Just sent a screenshot. It was like, this happened. Bye.
So anyway, yes, if you were on the VH1 duet special, you are automatically higher than number 20 for me. I should also add that Sophie B. Hawkins came out at the end and did a performance of Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover, but she'd already been famous for a while. Point being, Joan Osborne, love you. Do not love this song like I used to. Actually, even when I re-listen to the Relish album, which I do with some frequency, this is a song that I will even skip because it's just not that good. But I listened to it multiple times here and I can see why it was a hit. It's very catchy and it does have just enough of a point of view to be different from what's usually on the radio.
Sure.
But not my dopest hit. Now, the listeners, Sarah, could not disagree more. They put the song in third place.
Wow.
Yes. 28 points from the listeners for Joan Osborne.
That is, I mean, that is understandable. I don't think this is incorrect. I don't agree, but this is not, you know, it's not the Patty Griffin incident.
Yes. Now, to call out our own complete bullshit, what do we do when we talk about songs that you have to pick because they were the hits? Well, what we don't do is pick Give Me One Reason or Fast Car when we talk about Tracy Chapman. Instead, we pick The Promise because that just seemed like the right song.
Yeah, it did. It did.
The Promise is on the album New Beginning, which also featured the song Give Me One Reason. And Sarah, I cannot find this online, but I am almost certain that this song, The Promise, was used in a commercial for the United Negro College Fund. I can't.
Really?
I have just some memory of this song being in a United Negro College Fund commercial. Anyway, The Promise. Tracy Chapman was all over the Lilith Fair. She was played a lot of the dates. And in a way, Tracy Chapman, much like the Indigo Girls, but probably even to a bigger degree because she had had much bigger hits, she is one of the godmothers of the Lilith Fair, just in terms of the female singer-songwriter ethos that she was able to gestalt, that she was able to create. Her music, in some ways, paved the way for all of the artists that we are going to be talking about, even if they don't make folk music, because she had such an interesting and unusual rise to fame. And the whole thing about her, even to a degree that sometimes the media fetishized it, was that she was a folk singer who never expected to get huge doing what she did. She just wanted to make the art she believed in. And then, oops, she becomes a superstar. Now, we've talked about Tracy Chapman on this podcast before. Obviously, she is brilliant, but also she has to be part of this conversation for so many reasons, and even more than the ones I just described, frankly. And The Promise is a long, slow, sad song. And if you're not weeping into the shoulder of someone wearing a pashmina by the time it's over, I don't know what to tell you. Here's a clip from The Promise.
If you think of me, if you miss me once in a while, then I'll return to you. I'll return and fill that space in your heart.
Oh, the schmaltz, the schmaltz.
It's, I mean, there's a bunch of songs like that. The whole album is like 6.5 minute songs.
Yes. And they all have, they're all about, there's a song called The Rape of the World on that album.
Oh, God. Yeah. And like everything has titles in it, like Ruin, Crushed Hearts. I mean, and this song is too much from the jump. Like the picked chords, the strings, a lot of very, you know, broad, blank images, like, you know, fill a space in your heart. But then the next line when she's like remembering, and this very evocative account of like a soulmate relationship that nevertheless is not functioning.
Mm-hmm.
The promise is that it will continue to function, and there is such sincere longing and mourning in this, and such a strong sense of the narrator taking leave of the mortal coil, and that this is a queer artist of color who appears to be singing across, like through the veil, to a lover, to a past lover, to past versions of her own self. I mean, it is painfully earnest and sentimental, but not saccharine, not insincere. And there is a nostalgic, like that pain that is part of the word nostalgia, that is so recognizable to anyone who has ever grieved anything.
Mm-hmm.
I find this song extremely effective, like to a fault. The fact that I am this far into my comments and have not started snuffling into the mic is really surprising to me. I certainly can't get through more than a minute of the song without the tears flowing. And I think that that quality of like this balance of the content, the presentation, the artist's career, and the artist's sort of larger importance and like import to what not just the Lilith Fair meant and was trying to do, but what how women are just trying to be alive in the world, and queer artists are, and artists of color are, I think is extremely Lilith. And I am not sure that it's going to stay where it is, but I think this might actually be too low, but it's still number 4.
Hey!
27 points.
So I just feel like the very fact that Tracy Chapman has had a major mainstream career is a miracle in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because her songs, like you said, they're so earnest. There's never, well, I shouldn't say there's never any humor. Actually, one of the things that made Give Me One Reason such a surprise is that that song is very flirty and sexy and fun. And that's just not what we had come to expect from Tracy Chapman. But for the most part, she is a consummate musician. She has incredible chops. She is willing to be, let me put it this way, she can be fun, flirty, and funny, but she is willing to be the exact opposite of those things and sort of insists that we listen to her as she does that. And her songwriting structures are so interesting. You know, we've talked before about how Fast Car is such an unusual song in its structure and is incredibly powerful. And in its way, The Promise is also very unusual because it's not much happens in this song.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like one mood.
It's all future tense. Yeah.
Yeah. And like there isn't a lot of musical dynamism in it, and yet it really works, I think. I don't mean this necessarily as an insult when I say that you could remove Sarah McLachlan's Angel from those ASPCA commercials and drop The Promise in there, and it would be just as effective.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, imagine a sad puppy looking at you while The Promise is playing.
Yeah. In your arms, where all my journeys end.
Oh, God.
Fine, send all the puppies.
And it's
all
it's like
the puppies.
There's something about the quality of her voice, even the timbre of her voice, that makes it seem like she means it when she sings. And there's something about how understated this song is that makes me believe it more. I could maybe do with a little bit less of the strings on there, but, you know, whatever. But I still think that this song really works, and it's quite lovely, and it takes a very special artist to, like you said, be earnest without being saccharine, and she really pulls it off. And I just, I mean, I don't know. Again, I'm going to take the radical position that I love Tracy Chapman, you know, like every other sane person in the world. So I also put this song very high. In fact, I put it in third place. I just think... Yep. Again, like, she is the type of artist that the Lilith Fair was designed to celebrate, and the strength of her artistry is one of the reasons that the Lilith Fair worked. So, yeah, third place for me, 28 points. And the listeners, somewhat surprisingly, put it in 12th place with 19 points.
Okay.
But, you know, okay, yeah, we'll take it.
I get it. I mean... This next song is like, I have absolutely no idea what to expect. I looked at my ranking just now, having forgotten what it was, looking at my notes, and I'm like, what? And then I thought about it for 2 seconds. I was like, okay, I guess I had no choice. So the next song is Sleep to Dream by Fiona Apple, and I am going to be so interested to hear where everybody else put it and their rationale for doing so. Do you have any opening comments, or shall we hear it?
I'm curious to know if you knew this song before we sat down to do this season.
I thought I didn't. I'm at this stage now where, like, song titles sometimes have no meaning to me, and I thought I didn't, but I did know the song. I just didn't recognize it based on the title.
Well, interestingly, this is a song that Fiona Apple wrote when she was 14. And then it showed up a couple of years later when she was still a teenager on her debut album, Tidal, T-I-D-A-L, that also featured Criminal, Shadowboxer, many other songs. We have talked about Fiona Apple on this show multiple times. I know that I am much more of a Fiona Apple fan than you, although I'm interested to hear what you think about this one. I do want to note that an R&B singer named Betty LaVette released an album in which she covered only songs written by women, and this song was one of the ones that she covered. And in fact, the name of the album was I've Got My Own Hell to Raise, which is a lyric from Sleep to Dream. So this song was part of the larger cultural conversation in several ways at the time of its release and after. But without further ado, here is a clip from Sleep to Dream.
I'll tell you how I feel, but you don't care. I say tell me the truth, but you don't dare. You say love is a hell you cannot bear. And I say give me my back and then go there for all I care. I got my feet on the ground and I don't go to sleep to dream. You got your head in the clouds, you're not at all what you seem. This mind, this body, and this voice cannot be stifled by your deep.
I have to say, I fucking love this song. Lyrically, the fury in it is so crystalline. And the fact that she wrote this song at 14 boggles my mind. Because the level of viciousness, but the clarity with which she sees the asshole that she is tearing down is... You can feel the burn from 100 miles away.
Yeah. I mean, there's like... There's the sort of... outre melodrama, like this sort of flamboyant everything is death and sadness thing that's going on with Biff Naked. There's a place for that and I respect it, but this is like, it's drama versus soap operatics,
right?
Basically
histrionics
with this song, which yes, exactly, which I think that I'm always sort of startled every time with Fiona Apple by the pairing of this voice and the sophistication of the lyrics. And it, like, there's a, it can take a while for it to sort of fall into gear in my ears.
Mm.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but like the defiance in these lyrics, and her, I think Fiona Apple might be a case like Katie Lang, where it's like this person and this talent exists outside of the axes that we are using right now. So, I mean, I love the song. I think it's really good. But Fiona as a Lilith prospect, I just did not know where to put her. I could not get my arms around her. I think she is she's too Fiona to be assessed in this way, but these are the lives we have chosen. Yeah. So
I also think this is a great reminder that what we're talking about here is more a concept, because Fiona Apple, unlike Melissa Etheridge, did play the Lilith Fair. But I think
you're
right that when we talk about the mindset or the ethos of Lilithness, she is a complicated figure, despite having been on the tour. It's not the same thing.
Yeah. Like, I think that the theory of her and her, like that New Yorker article about her as a maker, and the way that she thinks about her, not only her creative output, but herself as a symbol for people. And this weird, like, non-genre shifting that she does. And I mean, her whole deal, HWD, is like extremely Lilith, but then the output defies that, like that or any other pigeonhole.
Yeah, I think sometimes that you're onto something. It's like Fiona Apple is too fucking one time when I was in college, I was in a theater class where we were talking about Beckett. And the professor said, you know, with a lot of playwrights, you talk about the links between them, you know, like this led to this led to this. Well, Beckett is a cul-de-sac.
Right.
Like, he is so distinct. He's so unusual. His genius is so specific that no one else is like him. And it's even hard sometimes to know where he got it from. He just leads to a road that ends. And I feel like in a way, Fiona Apple is like that. And that is a testament to her skill, but also, yes, makes it hard to rank her alongside, you know, very talented, but perhaps more, less wildly inventive musicians.
Yeah. And, but then at the same time, that very resistance to categorizing is also a resistance to being dismissed. And that's extremely Lilith.
Yeah.
And so not only was I obliged, therefore, to reassess my ranking of Katie Lang, which was upsetting. I am upset. And still not convinced I did the right thing. But I think that we have to include, I think we can't be too new criticism about it and not, and take it only on the basis of the song. And now, a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Let's talk about taking care of our minds. There are a lot of ways to take care of your mind and brain. Learning a new language, my personal favorite, the power nap, and BetterHelp online therapy. Therapy is great. I've been using it for decades now, and it's been such a force for good in my life. It's a place to work through sticky emotions and situations, and it is the one time that I am willing to bore someone else with what I dreamed last night. BetterHelp is online therapy. You can pick your medium, whether it's video, phone, even live chat-only therapy sessions, so you don't have to be on camera if you're not into that. It's also more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. If you're ready to try BetterHelp, I hope you're also ready to save money. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/Mark and Sarah. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MARK and SARAH. Thanks, BetterHelp. All this by way of saying that I put her in 11th place with 20 points, and I still, like, I think 20th with 11 points would have been right. I think second place might have been okay. Right. Like, this may change during this episode if I don't die, which I'm going to. But for right now, Saint Fiona of the Apple Orchard, 11th place, 20 points. What'd you do?
So I love this song, and I'm going to tell you that I actually gave her, I bumped her up a notch, maybe even two notches, because I feel like still furious about the way that she was treated by the chauvinistic press when this album came out and in the first like 5, 6, 7 years of her career. Because how can you fucking listen to this song and be like, she's just a waif who shows her panties? Like, no.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yes, she looks, she had like a sexy video for the song Criminal where she was a waif who showed her panties, but that was like for a reason, you dumb fucks. And I just, it feels very Lilith to me to like be furious on behalf of a woman who is misunderstood and mistreated by the chauvinistic press.
And then this video seems to me to be like from that same creative idea, but like satirizing it.
Yes, because she keeps literally like, glitching out in the middle of it. She's like,
yeah,
this image is so unstable that it can't even last the 3.5 minutes of the song.
And like, here's, you know, another sulky, junky, dirty hotel room visual, but the lyrics are like throwing you out of that. So, how Lilith to be just frustrated on her behalf.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I still totally get, right I actually that. Still have fury. But anyway, okay. So I put this song in 7th place. And the listeners put it in 9th. So we're all essentially aligned about the journey of Sleep to Dream on this particular show.
Okay.
Now we're back to Lisa Loeb. We have talked about this song before in an episode where we ranked songs called Stay. You might remember that song with, what's her name? All you gotta do is stay a minute, just take Alessia Cara. That was the, anyway, I remember you liked that.
I did.
You remember when you liked that one song by that girl who had the hair and she had the voice on her? Oh, that was
Zed with 2 D's.
Zed. Lord, yes, Zed with 2 D's. I have never understood him. Anyway, but Sarah, I feel like that we had to talk about Lisa Loeb, who was on the Lilith Fair. Actually saw her at the Lilith Fair, for heaven's sake. And as with Joan Osborne, I don't know what other song we would have. I mean, she had 2 other hits that reached the top 20. But come on, if you're going to talk about Lisa Loeb, this is the one.
Yeah, no, you have to. And then if you're me, you have to watch the video with mounting just annoyance because the song is annoying. But my ranking, ergo, is going to be pretty bonkers. Let's just hear the clip and get it over with, shall we?
Okay.
You say,
shut up.
I only hear what I want to. You say, I talk so all the time.
So?
And I thought what I felt was simple. And I thought that I don't belong. And now that I am.
Okay, look. Here's the thing. I don't like this song and I think it's annoying, but I have to respect the cleverness of the construction. Her like tiresome spectacles and shabby chic video set and the black tights and the block heel, slap. Like, she's just annoying to me. But I think that annoyance, first of all, is part of the song. And this like free versey, like coffee house, both narrator and object sound like manipulative whiners. Of course, she misses him even though he sucks. But like, There is actually a lot going on with this song that if you are able to subtract the omnipresence of the song at a certain point, if you're able to subtract a certain anthropology catalog factory seconds tweeness to her personal presentation, and you know, that's difficult, but there is a there's a cleverness to the construction of the song and to the implication of both singer and song object that I have to respect. I also think that this sort of not twee exactly, but just, you know, this like shabby chic lady singer songwriter, like emotional messiness and neediness, and I don't know how to put it, but I think that in its being annoying, it is also Lilithy. Like that this is perhaps exactly what people who dismissed the fest were trying to avoid by being like, not, you know, for all the gold in Fort Knox would I go to that because Lisa Loeb. Like, I think that still counts as Lilithosity. And I think the fact that I have perhaps underestimated the song historically because I don't like it is exactly what Lilith was supposed to provide provide a wall around the artist from, was my shitty, unproductive attitude, I guess. So all this by way of saying that it's sort of interesting that there are a number of the songs in the top 10 that I'm like, I'd never want to hear that again, but it's Lilithy as fuck. This is one of them. Third place.
Whoa.
28 points.
Whoa, shit. Okay, well.
You are welcome, Lisa Loeb. It's the last nice fucking thing I'm ever doing for you. Do not stay.
I will step on those glasses.
And then give them to Wednesday Adams. And what she does with them, you don't want to know.
Now, I, as you may recall from when we talked about this song before, am all in the tank for this song. I love it. It is a karaoke staple for me because it is really fun to really tap into the rage in this song.
Oh, sure. I will listen to you sing it. She's out.
Okay, great, great. I'll take
up. She got to stand outside.
I'll take on the mantle of this song from here on out. But I really love this song, and I actually really like the album that it's on. Well, originally it was, of course, on the Reality Bites soundtrack. And when it reached number one, which is one of the few songs, I think maybe even the only song on this entire season that reached number one, she did not have a record deal. And it was her neighbor and friend Ethan Hawke who got her onto the soundtrack. He directed the video with the irritating cat that she shows up several times. But then she released this album that was full of really weird college rock songs that I quite liked. But listen, do I completely understand your antipathy? Yes, I do. And the fact that this song is probably exactly what people who hated Lilith Without Going were thinking of is, you're right, part of the reason it is a very Lilith song. But for me, now this is my own, like, crawling up my own butt rationale, but I could not rank this song higher than 10th, which is where I ranked it, because to me, a true top five Lilith song cannot be Whining About a Boy.
Fair.
That's just like some Mark Blankenship internalized. Those are some internal things I've created, some criteria.
But if it's whining about a boy's whining.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. So I think, and the lyrics to the
We're
song.
Through the looking glass.
But the lyrics are very sophisticated, and she really is, like, so thoughtful about all of the ways that he's an asshole, and she's, I probably was being unfair when I did this, but, you know, these songs have to go somewhere, and I eventually had to go to bed.
Yeah.
I eventually had to go to bed.
I get it.
But the song is great, and the lyrics are fun and smart and clever, and she's a really good artist. And anyway, 10th place for me, 21 points. If you are not familiar with any of her other songs, do give a listen to her song, Do You Sleep, which reached the top 20, but not the top 10 on the Hot 100.
I think I know that song, and I found it less repellent.
Yeah, it's just a really interesting, good song. Do You Sleep? Question mark included. Now, the listeners were more aligned with you, Sarah. They put this song in fourth place and gave it 27 points.
Whew. Okay. We're almost there, and I'm still alive.
We did it. Almost. Okay.
Almost.
Last up is a song that reached number 7 on the Hot 100 in the summer of 97, meaning it peaked when the Lilith Fair was happening, which I think is important to note. It is by Sean Colvin, who until this point had been a very well-respected but somewhat underground folk musician. She was the kind of artist who was perpetually singing backup vocals on everybody else's albums. She sings background vocals on the Indigo Girls albums. She sings background on a song by Suzanne Vega. Suzanne Vega sings background vocals on a song that Sean Colvin recorded called Diamond in the Rough. Like, they're just she was just part of that community of female folky singer-songwriters who were always helping each other, which is probably
the
one of the
reasons. The artist's artist, yeah.
What, say what, sorry?
The artist's artist.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's probably one of the reasons that she said yes to being on the Lilith Fair, is because she was like, well, all my friends are going to be there. So she also was, in that artist's artist way that you just described, constantly getting nominated for Grammys, even though she didn't really have a lot of mainstream hits. I remember so clearly a song of hers called I Don't Know Why got a Grammy nomination for female pop vocal performance. And I was really very familiar with pop songs at this time, and I had never even heard of her. And I was like, what the fuck? So that Grammy nomination is what got me into her music, because I hadn't quite clocked that she was always in the background of other albums that I liked. And so when Sunny Came Home came out and was an actual breakthrough hit for her, I remember thinking, oh, they're going to give her a major Grammy for this, because they've been wanting to give her a Grammy in a major category for years. This is the song that will give them the reason to do it. And I was right. This song earned the Grammys for both record and song of the year. So no small thing. And famously, when she was accepting one of those awards, Old Dirty Bastard bum rushed the mic and started talking about Wu-Tang being for the children. All of that said, there is a lot of interesting context around how I think Sean Colvin is in some ways the poster child for the Lilith Fair because of all these things. Like, she rode up to that one moment of success while this festival was happening. She came out of the community of women artists who were the backbone of this initial wave of Lilith Fair performances. Also, she happened to write a murder ballad that sounded like a non-threatening adult contemporary hit, but is actually about a woman who burns the fucking house down because she hates everyone inside of it so much. Here is a clip from Sunny Came Home.
Sunny came home with a list of names. She didn't believe in transcendent. And it's time for a few small repairs, she said. Sunny came home with a vengeance. She says days go by, I don't know why. I'm walking on a wire.
Now, Sarah, I loved this song at the time, but I have to say, I think I love it more now. It's just so sinister, but so beautiful. And the very last thing that happens in this song, you hear the sound of a match being struck, and then you hear the sound of someone blowing it out. And it's like Sean Colvin herself is so ensorcelled by this woman's decision to burn the fucking house down that she is now playing around with the idea of becoming a firebug. There's just enough detail in this song to let you know that this woman has reached the end of her rope, but there's just enough mystery that we have to do some of the work ourselves. And the fact that it is all encased in this really fucking great riff, and that the singing is really good, and that the singing is very evocative and expressive, but it's never overly showy, All of that to me just further cements this as a fucking masterpiece of a song. And again, I really liked it in the 90s. I listened to the album A Few Small Repairs many, many times because I was already a huge Sean Colvin fan. But like now in this moment, I think I like this song more than ever. That is why for me, Sarah, it is number two, 29 points.
Wow.
Yes. And sometimes I will put songs high in the ranking for a single episode because I like to keep things interesting for myself. But I really think that Sean Colvin is going to ride in my top five through the end. I fucking love this song. I feel like it is very Lilith for all of the reasons I just said. Number two.
I had it pretty high up also. I did not miss this song. I felt like I heard it a lot of times when it first came out, and that was enough. But it was actually quite pleasurable to be reunited with it in this context because I was spending a lot of time thinking about, I mean, like, my first note is like, nothing says Lilith Fair like fucking arson. But I mean,
set to a mandolin.
Right. But what does say Lilith Fair is the sort of occupation of what I would call a very, very penis-y form, which is outlaw country.
Mm.
Like right down to this opening riff with the mandolin, which is something that Traveling Wilburys, Merle Haggard, what's his nuts?
Chris Christopherson.
Who sang Old Red, George Jones.
Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, he wasn't an outlaw country guy, but like these sorts of story songs about like prison escape, vengeful destruction of property. This is a very boner driven format. And she has a very feminine, like she picks a more feminine, stereotypically, I guess, instrument. I know a lot of men play the mandolin. Don't at me. And she has a very beautiful voice that is in a higher register, obviously. And she's singing about this, you know, lady named Sunny, like doing a vengeance crime or possibly being insane. It's unclear where she came home from. Could have been a hospital. Could have been rehab. Could have been anywhere. So I find that extremely Lilith-y, that from sort of the center of power that is very woman-centric, Sean Colvin sets up in this very male-dominated subgenre of music and tells this song that usually would be by and about a dude.
Yeah.
So that's super Lilith-y. And she, like, the delivery is exactly right. The composition is exactly right. Like, now that I've listened to it a few times for this, I'm all set again because it really was, I feel like, just in my world, it was everywhere. And I can get tired of it, even though it's good. But it's super Lilith-y. Not as Lilith-y as you thought, but it did make my top 10. It is seventh with 24 points.
Yeah, and I think the fact that we have had you put three of these songs in the top 10 and then had one at number 11 for this week's episode, and I put four of them in the top 10. Like, these are some fucking heavy hitters. The lowest ranked song was at 18th for us this week, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Heavy hitters. And I just want to go back to the line in the bridge. Get the kids and bring, or grab the kids and bring a sweater. Dry is good and wind is better.
Wind is better.
That is so fucking scary.
Yeah. And like, she's just created a mnemonic for successfully arsoning. Every good boy deserves fire. What is happening?
It's just like, and the fact that she, you know, it's one of those things where if your mom is yelling at you, she's mad. But if she's keeping a very low tone, she's really mad.
She's really mad. Yep.
And there's something about the pleasantness of this song and the breathiness with which she says this about wind is better that you freak. Oh, she's going to fucking burn us all. Like, get the fuck away.
Seriously. Go out the back door. No talking. Don't make eye contact. Yeah.
One of the greatest tweets I ever saw said, if you come home and your woman is listening to Goodbye Earl, not dancing, not singing along, just listening, you better hit the bricks.
I'm going to stitch that on a pillow. Exactly. Yeah, hit the road before the road hits back. Fucking A. Where did the listeners put this?
They put it in first place.
Wow. Yes.
I was not expecting that. But I think that this is one of the things where our voting system actually helps a song like Sunny Came Home, because we invite mm-hmm. people when we have 30 songs to pick their six favorites. And so right. I think that this may not have been everybody's first place song, but it was in so many people's top six that it actually became right. the number one vote getter overall. And yeah. the preferential ballot, as it were, really helped Sunny Came Home on this mm-hmm. countdown. And I think that's fucking cool.
Yeah. Ooh. All right. Well, listeners who are new or haven't been voting, go over to patreon.com/mastass and get yourself set up with that while we do some math.
Everyone, we're back. Now, because this week's songs all did so fucking well, we're just going to read out the ranking of the entire top 15, because all five of our new songs made it into the top 15. So good on ya, ladies.
Wow.
In 15th place, Sarah, we have Hand in My Pocket. Mm-hmm. And then we have a tie for 14th place. They both got 54 points, with The Promise and One of Us coming in a tie for 14th place.
Damn.
Then in 12th place, we have My Sister by the Juliana Hatfield 3. In 11th place, we have He Thinks He'll Keep Her. Hanging on in the top 10, it's Fuckin' Run by Liz Phair. 9th place is Let Him Fly by Patty Griffin. Storming into the chart in 8th place, it's Fiona Apple with Sleep to Dream. In 7th place, it's Come to My Window by Melissa Etheridge. In 6th place, it's Cornflake Girl. In 5th place, thanks to Sarah's largesse, it is Stay, I Missed You by Lisa Loeb and 9 Stories. In 4th place, it is As Cool As I Am. Let me do this. In 5th place with 76 points, it's Stay, I Missed You. In 4th place with 77 points, it's As Cool As I Am. In 3rd place with 78 points, it's Galileo.
Wow.
So note, one point difference there. Then in 2nd place, we jump up to 82 points for I Will Remember You. Which means, with 83 points, a one-point lead, Sunny Came Home is our number one song this week.
Wow.
I am just gobsmacked.
I'm not surprised that it did well. I'm not surprised that it came in the top five, but that it unseated McGlocks.
Yeah. Like, I just wasn't, I love this song, as we just discussed, but I'm just so happily surprised that it had the power to go first place, like top of the podium. Sean Colvin anthem plays when she accepts her medal.
And I'm not sure that it's going to be possible to unseat her, although, next week compared to this week will be a little more soothing. I think it will be a little easier to rank those, but man, the last episode and the full ranking, it's going to be a street fight. So like we've said before, we need your help. patreon.com/mastus, and also reach out to us on Twitter at TalkSongs. We'd love to hear from you.
And, you know, if you're going to burn the house down, just take notes from Sean Colvin.
Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Mark Blankenship, that's me, and Sarah D. Bunting.
That's me. I also edit the podcast, which is a proud member of the Bleav Network. Learn more at bleav.com.
To learn more about us, submit song requests, get a pop chart reading, or buy a Mastus book, visit our website at markandsarahtalkaboutsongs.com. You'll also find all of our social media links there, too.
That's Mark and Sarah, with an H, talkaboutsongs.com. And for even more content and access to the Mastass Happy Hour, become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/mastass.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Bleav. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Bleav.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.